As the final votes are tallied from Election 2020 across the country, we examine the numbers with Iowa pollster Ann Selzer on this edition of Iowa Press.
Funding for Iowa Press was provided by Friends, the Iowa PBS Foundation, the Associated General Contractors of Iowa, the public's partner in building Iowa's highway, bridge, and municipal utility infrastructure.
Iowa PBS is supported in part by Wells Fargo. Fuel Iowa is a voice and a resource for Iowa's fuel industry. Our members offer a diverse range of products, including fuel, grocery, and convenience items. They help keep Iowans on the move in rural and urban communities. Together, we fuel Iowa.
Small businesses are the backbone of Iowa's communities, and they are backed by Iowa banks. With advice, loans, and financial services, banks across Iowa are committed to showing small businesses the way to a stronger tomorrow. Learn more at iowabankers.com. For decades, Iowa Press has brought you politicians and newsmakers from across Iowa and beyond, celebrating nearly 50 years of broadcast excellence on statewide Iowa PBS. This is the Friday, November 6th edition of Iowa Press. Here is David Yepsen.
Americans held their collective breath this week as Election Day turned into Election Week with extended vote counting in battleground states across the country. In the highest turnout election ever, there were many surprises for voters and political observers, including disparities in final margins from the expectations of public opinion polls. The final Des Moines Register MediaCom Iowa poll in late October raised eyebrows for pegging large leads for Donald Trump and Joni Ernst in this state. Other pollsters predicted a close race or leads for Joe Biden and Teresa Greenfield here. The Iowa poll was a clear winner of election night, and its pollster Ann Selzer joins us today at the Iowa Press table to discuss it. Ann, welcome to the show.
It's always a pleasure to be here, David.
Good to have you with us. And I want our viewers to know that you and I are taping this interview on Friday afternoon.
Right.
Well, let's begin. We know what happened in Iowa, but why? What were the elements that went into the Republican victories in this state?
You know, there's so many. I'll just touch on a couple, and maybe we'll follow up. But I think when you look at the presidential race and how the counties fell, they fell identically to the way they fell in 2016. That is, Joe Biden won six counties. He won the same six counties that Hillary Clinton had won. So Iowa, as just geographically a predominantly red state, there hasn't been that much change. There was a bit of a whisper, or seemed like wind at the time, in 2018 in the congressional races, and Democrats seemed to have some momentum. But perhaps it was a wake-up call for Republicans, and in they came, and they did well at the polls.
What were Iowans saying with their votes? You ask people why they vote the way they do. What did you find about
that? Well, we ask what issues are important to them, and then we try to divine the why there. I think one of the things we noticed was a clear and consistent message from Republicans that it's the economy, stupid. That what was driving their vote more than anything else was the economy. And for Democrats supporting Joe Biden, there it was more dispersed. There were some that cared about COVID. There were some that cared about restoring what is good about America. That was our language there. There were some about competent leadership. But there wasn't that one key thing that people could latch on to. And you heard that as you talked to people out on the street, too, I bet.
So do you think Iowa is a red state or a purple state? Mm-hmm. We had the Republican state chairman sitting right where you were. He was saying he thought Iowa was a purple state. The governor said, no, Iowa's a red state. What do you think?
You know, it depends on how you define it, I suppose. But if purple means that there will be times that Democrats are elected and there will be times that Republicans hold more sway, then Iowa is purple. It depends on the quality of the candidates and depends on the consistency and clarity in the message.
One of the things demographically that I look at and that I've noticed over the years in polls, if you look at a map of the country, Iowa seems to be performing more like Nebraska and Missouri than Wisconsin and Minnesota. It's as if it isn't northern Iowa or southern Iowa. It's sort of a diagonal across our state. Is there anything to that? Is there some demographic reason why that?
Well, I've never looked at the geometry quite like that. We certainly look at the river counties on the Mississippi side and see that those can swing, that blue-collar manufacturing sector side. And they swung for Donald Trump, and they did not come back. And I think there was a lot of expectation for the first congressional district after they had elected Abby Finkenauer 2 years ago, that was a meaningful and lasting change. There can be change in Iowa, but lasting, I think that's the hard part.
Other polls, including yours, early on had a much closer race, but in the end it broke for Trump and Ernst. What did you see that many of us did not?
Well, we certainly saw a difference in our data, which if you're a pollster and this is your final poll, that there's a little bit of a clench to be sure that everything is right. So we looked at all the different ways that things came together, and as you know, our approach is to trust our method. But just from a spectator point of view, a little bit of inside, but when we released our September poll, I remember saying to the editors and reporters at the Register, if I were Joni Ernst or advising her, I would tell her to attach herself to Chuck Grassley, who had shown himself rather popular in that poll, and never leave his side. So there are things that can happen between a September poll and a final poll. And the second thing I have, again, this is observational, Governor Branstad resigned as the ambassador to China and came back and was on the campaign trail. Specifically, he has said the reason for his timing was to campaign. And as you know as well as I, he knows the state very, very well, and perhaps was not just a presence, but an advisor about where the votes are that can be had.
So did Republicans do a better job, in your estimation, of firing up their base than Democrats did?
They certainly had a clear and consistent message. And then, I think, if you watch the final week ahead of the election, there was more electricity on the Republican side. There were more rallies. There was more hype. My office is in Valley Junction, and there was a Trump parade that came by a couple of times with people honking their horns and showing some excitement. I happened to be listening to Rush Limbaugh earlier this week, perhaps Monday. He was talking about our poll. And he said, if you were an alien and you arrived here and all you could do was just look and see what this campaign is doing and what this campaign is doing, who would you think is winning? Because the excitement, the movement, that physical movement was on the Republican side and more sedate on the Democratic side.
Well, Democrats are having a little period of introspection here about their tactical decision not to do door-to-door campaigning. It wasn't just here in Iowa, but it was around the country. Looking back over the numbers and what you saw in your numbers, was that a mistake by Democrats?
You have to wonder if it were. I think there's one additional thing that, again, this is a little bit speculation on my part, but given that there is a presumption that Democrats would do more early voting and more absentee voting, if you recall the first day that early voting was available, the long lines of people who, as soon as they could vote, they were out there in those lines, not just in Iowa, but other states too. It made me wonder if the peak of the Democratic campaign was early. To get everybody signed up, get your absentee ballots, get early voting done, and that the Republicans, expecting a bigger turnout on Election Day, they began their final arc, later. So that the final days, the few days right before the election, was more of the Republican hitting their peak when the Democrats felt they'd banked enough. I don't know, and maybe you'll talk to somebody who'll come to this table and explain what happened there. But
we're all trying to divine what was going on there. So you're saying, in other words, they made a decision. They peaked too early, and Republicans were on at a better.
I wonder if that explains something.
You know, women, once again, women voted more Democratic than men. Why is that?
Well, my doctoral dissertation many, many years ago at the University of Iowa was on that topic. And my theory had to be had to do with women entering the workforce in large number and having an independent exposure to political ideas and political information apart from their husbands or their fathers, and that would lead them to look for their own self-interest and would lead to some separation. It makes some sense that way. There is a marriage gap as well, that if you are in a marriage, and in that mostly today means a heterosexual marriage, so there's one man, one woman, if you're married, you're more likely to vote Republican, and if you're unmarried, more likely to vote Democrat. And sometimes the marriage gap is bigger than the gender gap. But to me, it's kind of the same thing. If you're fending for yourself, if you're your own advocate, what party speaks to you?
Mm-hmm. TV ads. We were awash in TV ads. More television advertising money spent here than ever before. The law of diminishing returns at some point?
Again, I can speak to this as an observer of it, which it was an avalanche of ads. And it was, here's the one candidate and here's the opposition, and they're saying the same thing about each other. You know, it was just this kind of finger-pointing thing. For a lot of it, not all of it, but I don't know that enough money was spent on messaging as was spent on placement. And so you've got the repeated message, very easy to get burned out on television advertising, and very easy to avoid it as well if you want.
But sometimes, Ann, we've seen political advertising in the state that does move numbers. It does have an impact. I mean, Joni Ernst ad 6 years ago, Make 'em Squeal, one of the best political ads made in America in a long time. I didn't see anything like that this time. Did you? Was there anything that struck you as resonated particularly well with the electorate?
I have to say no. But did I watch every single ad? No. But the ones that I saw repeatedly, as I said, I just think the messaging was not as clear and concise and memorable.
Right. Rural versus urban, rural voters. Everyone's talking about rural voters. Mm-hmm. So a couple of questions about along those lines. One is, you know, much was made during the last 4 years about tariffs and derechos and low farm income, and time again, you know, oh, has Trump really hurt himself with these tariffs or what? What happened that rural America, suffering all these problems, still voted for Donald Trump?
I can't tell you that this is completely data-driven. It's informed by data, but doesn't make the solid case. When I have talked with rural voters, and you mentioned the trade tariffs, they say it was time for somebody to stand up to China. Somebody had to do it. And if we're harmed in the short run, we can recover in the long run. The derecho got very little attention outside of Iowa in terms of what that meant to all of that. But there was some attempt to make farmers whole. They've got crop insurance. There are some things in place. And the Trump administration came in with some programs that were designed specifically. And I think he was noted for saying, you farmers probably like it better now that you don't have to farm. Do I have that right? and you know, there may have been farmers that said, yeah. And by the way, he's fixing the economy. It's the best economy that we've ever had. And if it's, okay, we've suffered a setback with COVID, but if anybody can get our economy back, again, it's the economy, the economy, the economy. They think it's President Trump.
I've heard farmers say, I got my Trump money. So it wasn't federal money, it was Trump money. You know, and along those lines, there's a book out by Thomas Frank, What's the Matter with Kansas? And it explores the notion that rural people don't necessarily vote their economic interests, that it is social issues, that they're evangelical, or they're for the death penalty, or for Second Amendment rights. Do you think there's something to that? That we can't look at an economic index to see what rural America's doing. We've got to look at other things.
I believe that to be true. I've read the book. I grew up in Kansas. And what happened in their election pretty much reflects the same thing. And I think when you go to Northwest Iowa and when you talk to Trump voters and you talk to them about what is it that's happening here and push them, which I do when I do focus groups, I push on them, they will say, look, the most important thing are the babies. Mm. We've got to save the babies. Mm-hmm. And for people who don't live in that kind of neighborhood where there's a strong evangelical influence, you might think that they're not paying enough attention to other things. It's the most important thing. Mm-hmm. And I think there are several of those issues, the Second Amendment being another one of them, that it touches the heart. Mm-hmm. And once you have that emotional sort of sense of this is the only moral way to go, it's very hard for someone to come in and say, well, yeah, but how's your checkbook lately? Mm-hmm. If they're doing okay, they're not going to bother so much. Even though they could be doing better, the checkbook doesn't stand a chance mm-hmm. against a moral imperative.
We talked about rural. Let's talk about suburbs. Much is made of voters in America, but also here, even here in Iowa, that there's a growing suburban vote. Here in Iowa, though, Republicans seem to do fairly well in legislative races in the suburbs.
And there's obviously a clear distinction between what happened in the legislative races and what happened elsewhere. But I think that people who are known and well known to their constituents do well in Iowa. It's a rare thing to be booted out of office unless there is such an overwhelming and again, consistent message that says this isn't working for Iowa anymore. Mm-hmm. And I didn't hear it. I don't know if you heard it.
I wonder if we don't make too much out of the suburbs. I mean, if you look at Iowa's population, there are a lot of us who are one or two generations removed from small town Iowa or the farm. You grew up in Kansas. I grew up in Jefferson, Iowa.
So I grew up in urban Kansas.
Well, all right. But I mean, so my point is that we talk about suburbs, but is that really that big of a deal in terms of the electorate? There are a lot of evangelicals, for example, who live in the suburbs. Are we making too much out of it?
I think where you live, people do tend, this is trite, tend to sort themselves by where do they feel comfortable. And they build a community of like-minded souls where they live. So they go to the same church. They shop at the same grocery store. There's a certain amount of that birds of a feather come and live together. But in a city like Des Moines, if you look at many neighborhoods in Des Moines, and you look at West Des Moines, it's not like it's a completely different universe. Mm-hmm. It's not like Urbandale is a completely different universe. Mm-hmm. So there's more intermarriage, if you will, in terms of how people relate that way. But I think it may have had more to do with the women's vote than suburb-urban necessarily.
What do you mean?
That suburban women in particular showed an early distaste for the Trump style of presidency, and there was some backing off of that, mm-hmm. and showed up in Iowa in 2018 in terms of flipping a couple of congressional districts.
Mm-hmm. Independents, people who aren't Republicans or Democrats, how did they perform here in Iowa?
They went strongly for President Trump. And that was a difference from our September poll. It's one of those things that makes a pollster's heart flutter a bit about how is that happening. Two things happen close to an election day. One is that people change their mind about who they're supporting. They've been waffling. They settle in. The second thing that happens is that people decide to vote who hadn't presented themselves as a likely voter in our polls before. And so that's part of that in the final push of getting not only people you know will vote, but getting them to go get other people to go and vote. So I think part of what happens with independents is that people went and found like-minded souls, or they got pulled into the polls when they left to their own devices might not have. Mm-hmm. I'll add just one other detail, which is there was so much talk about trouble at the polls that there may have been people who just decided they didn't get their request in for an absentee ballot in time, and they thought, I'll just have to skip it because I'm not going to stand in line. I don't want to be pressured at the polls in any kind of way. And then they drove by their polling place, and I think across Iowa, it was pretty easy, mm-hmm. in and out. And so there may have been more people who voted than anticipated it.
Mm-hmm. Minority voters in Iowa, particularly Iowans of Latino ancestry, NPR had a story today that the gist of which was that we have to quit referring to Latinos as Latinos. There are people of Mexican ancestry mm-hmm. and Cuban ancestry and Puerto Rican and others. Is this an issue in Iowa? Iowa's still a pretty lily white place, right?
It is, and so that's a handicap to a pollster to really kind of separate them out. I will tell you, if you look deep into the tea leaves below the level that would ever be published, we see some of those things happening. We do not see that it is necessarily a slam dunk for Democratic candidates among Latino, among African Americans, and among Native Americans. Now, I say this literally at the tea leaf level, the tiny little dots of data that simply show something that you might not expect in terms of an overall, this is, you're either white or you're non-white. Mm-hmm. If you're non-white, it's a good predictor you're going to vote Democratic. We're seeing some shakeup in that.
Now, Republicans were doing pretty well with registrations of felons who had regained the franchise, and there was a lot of speculation among Republicans that a lot of these are minority voters, and they'll be Democrats. Well, in fact, there were a lot of them that were white, blue collar, and they opted to vote for Republicans. We could go on about that. I want to switch gears and to the mechanics of polling. After that final poll, you took a lot of grief from Democrats and others because you were so different than they were. What did you see? I realize I'm asking you about your secret sauce here, but what did you see that everybody else missed?
This is really in the mechanics, and it can get technical, so I'll try to avoid it. My approach to polling is to think about it as polling forward. That is, I don't want to get in the way of my data revealing to me what is happening. So I don't want to make assumptions. I don't want to make any judgments about what is the right outcome or the wrong outcome. There are a lot of other polling outfits that decide how they're going to weight their data by looking backwards to see what was I expecting, and how would they have arrived at that, except to look at past elections and sort of, you know, embed those assumptions into their data. I call that polling backward. And our approach is to stay out of the way. So when we see these numbers that are different from our September poll, we check everything that we normally check to make sure there's no funny business going on. And once we're convinced that it's okay, now we have to explain it to our client and have them feel comfortable. Mm-hmm. But my approach that maybe sets me apart is to just let it stand. Mm-hmm. And it can be an agonizing few days because you're in potshot land as everybody comes out to say, she's terrible, she'll be fired, this is no good, don't pay any attention to it. And I've been the outlier queen many times, so you'd think I would be used to it. It's not comfortable, but all I can do is wait. Right. And see.
Just trust the force.
Trust my method, yeah.
What do you say to people who, you hear this, you've heard this, I never get polled. Mm-hmm. I don't answer phones. No, nobody who has a landline anymore. I don't answer phone numbers I don't recognize. Is that true? How do you overcome that?
Sure, it's true. And this is probably the thing I worry about for our industry in the middle of the night, which is we rely on the kindness of strangers who will look at their phone when it rings and decide to answer it and decide to stay on the phone with us for a few minutes. And for no pay. They're volunteering an asset that they hold. And we make money off of that. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that business model, I keep saying, I don't know how long this can last. Mm-hmm. But I've said that for several cycles now.
Was it easier because of the pandemic? People were home, more people picking up the phone, wanting to talk to somebody?
Right. Well, it certainly is true that you can call outside of evening hours, because people may pick up their phone. They might be able to take a break if they want to do it. So in some ways, but not in a way that's a meaningful, that's more anecdotal than anything else.
A lot of criticism from Republicans and conservatives about the media and polling. Do you find it harder to reach Republicans and conservatives than Democrats and get them to respond?
We would have no way of knowing if it's more difficult to reach them if they won't talk to us. Huh. So I can only look at how did our polls perform, and we must have reached an okay number of Republicans, right? Or our numbers would not be accurate.
Do people know who the Iowa poll is? Does that help you get people to respond? I mean, it's not like Quinnipiac's calling up and people say, what? You know, that people are familiar with the Des Moines Register, they're familiar with Mediacom, they're familiar with the Iowa poll. Is that a help in increasing responses?
I would like to think it is. I would like to think when an Iowan answers the phone and says, hello, I'm calling from the Iowa poll, that gives them some comfort. But I can't tell you that it's an enormous advantage. Yeah.
One last thing, we've got a minute left. The caucuses. You had to pull a poll, and it was very controversial. Mm-hmm. What happened? Why did you do that?
There was an incident where a person who was part of the Pete Buttigieg campaign was polled, and they didn't hear their candidate's name mentioned. And so that caused, you know, a little bit of a concern. We investigated it. We found out that on the terminal where the polling was taking place, a person had made the font bigger so that the whole list of candidates wasn't on the same screen. So they didn't realize there were more candidates to be named. And we, they're sort of flash forward as we're trying to work all this out on the day that the poll is going to be released. It became apparent that the poll would be weaponized.
Right.
No matter what we did, there was no way to come through unscathed. And rather than risk all of that and the integrity of the poll, it was pulled.
Yeah, you got a lot of criticism from people, but in the industry, you did the right thing.
Thank you. Hope so.
We have to leave it there. Thanks, Ann. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
And we'll be back next week with another edition of Iowa Press at our regular times, Friday night at 7:30 and again at noon on Sunday. Our guest will be Iowa's new Congresswoman-elect, Ashley Hinson of Marion, the first district Republican from Northeast Iowa, next week on Iowa Press. For all of us here at Iowa PBS, I'm David Yepsen, and thanks for joining us today.
Funding for Iowa Press was provided by Friends, the Iowa PBS Foundation, the Associated General Contractors of Iowa, the public's partner in building Iowa's highway, bridge, and municipal utility infrastructure.
Iowa PBS is supported in part by Wells Fargo. Fuel Iowa is a voice and a resource for Iowa's fuel industry. Our members offer a diverse range of products, including fuel, grocery, and convenience items. They help keep Iowans on the move in rural and urban communities. Together, we fuel Iowa.
Small businesses are the backbone of Iowa's communities, and they are backed by Iowa banks. With advice, loans, and financial services, banks across Iowa are committed to showing small businesses the way to a stronger tomorrow. Learn more at iowabankers.com.